Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, December 6th, 2023. We're pleased that you joined us this evening. We'll begin tonight with roll call. Mr. Standish?
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen?
Here.
Councilmember Green?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven council members present this evening. If you would please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish, upcoming meeting announcements, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Finance Subcommittee will hold a meeting on December 11th at 9 a.m. in the Water Utility Conference Room. And then the Water Utility Commission meeting for December 11th has been canceled. And then also the Board of Adjustment Special Session scheduled for December 18th has been canceled. And then the Budget and Finance Commission's next regular session will be held on December 19th at 4 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then there will be a neighborhood meeting on December 20th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers regarding the rezone and development plan of Estoso Highlands Drive. And then the Stormwater Utility Commission meeting for December 21st has been canceled. And then tentatively scheduled, the next Town Council regular schedule is scheduled for session is scheduled for January 10th, 2024 at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers, and that's contingent upon council's decision tonight. And we have one more slide. So regarding the OV path forward, we do have still a handful of events coming up here in the month of December, which of those are listed on the screen right now. And then again, for more information, please go to www.ovpathforward.com. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll now go to council reports this evening. We'll begin with Councilmember Jones-Ivy. She'll be recognizing eighth grade student from Pusch Ridge Middle School, Amina Ochoa.
Good evening. It is my profound pleasure tonight to introduce Amina Ochoa. She's an eighth grader from Pusch Ridge Christian Academy Middle School. Amina goes above and beyond the average student, and we're here to celebrate her dedication to her community, school, and extracurricular activities. As an honors student at Pusch Ridge Middle School, Amina is the president of the National Charity League, an organization that brings mothers and daughters together to practice philanthropy and promote human welfare. She also enjoys playing sports. She is on the school volleyball team and also plays on a local club team. In her free time, she also indulges in her passion of golf. Amina's actions and words cultivate an atmosphere of positivity where personal growth is not just encouraged, but becomes a collective pursuit. Her contribution to the community is one of love, compassion, and the unwavering belief in the inherent goodness of humanity. She further demonstrates her commitment to her community by serving on the altar at her church and lending her voice to the choir, where she recently showcased her talents in the holiday concert. Congratulations. Amina, we're so proud of you. And it just gives us so much honor just to know that we have many young people in our community like you, that is giving back in such a meaningful way. So it's an honor to recognize you as our spotlight on youth, and we can't wait to see what your future holds.
Councilmember Jones Ivey has an additional announcement to make.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Project Grad. December 11th, there is going to be a fundraiser at Jeremiah Italian Ice from 4 to 8. So all product bought during those hours, a portion of the sales will be going to Project Grad. They're located at 7348 North Oracle Road, and that is between McGee and Ina. Again, that's going to be December 11th from 4 to 8 p.m. Also, there's only one work day coming up because of this being a holiday month, so mark your calendars. The decoration work day is going to be December 9th, which is going to be Saturday, and it's going to be at the gym from 9 to noon. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett has a report.
Thank you. I just wanted to announce in the council meeting, although many of you already know, that we've had some excellent sports achievements from our local youth sports, the Oro Valley CDO football team just got first in the state in their division, and so they won the state championship up in Phoenix. So that's a tremendous accomplishment. And the Ironwood Ridge boys golf also won the national championship. And I believe maybe they practice at our courses. Is that correct, council member? Yeah. So anyway, I just want to congratulate both of them on those excellent achievements. And I'm sure there are others as well, but those are two that I know of that are a big deal for our community.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Under the direction of our HR officer, Andy Votava, the Health Care Benefits Trust Board met Tuesday, December 6th, for purposes of electing officers. And we elected Chairman Frank Trembulak, who has an incredible resume as a man who ran the Geisinger Health Clinic for a number of years, which is an awesome place with thousands of employees. So we also elected a vice chairman, our very own Dave Gephardt, to work with him. So it was a pretty exciting day. We had CBIZ, C-B-I-Z, who are a vendor, and they briefed us on the plan's principles that are available for our employees. And it's a really, really solid self-funded plan, and I'm looking forward to participating and helping with that. So thank you.
Okay. Other council reports? Councilmember Bowen?
Yes, thank you very much, everybody that came out tonight. I want to share an experience I've had using town facilities. I have the privilege of taking tennis lessons right now with Carlos, one of our pros up at the Push Ridge Academy, and he's been improving my game. Started taking lessons with him before Thanksgiving and also continued after Thanksgiving. Something I noticed while I was taking lessons was in court number 3, which is the court closest to the parking lot, the net was down. I mean, the middle of the net was literally on the tennis court. And the first time I saw it, I think nothing of it, right? Things happen. But if I go back a week and a half later and it's still there, I go ask the person in the office. And in asking the person in the office, I learned that we really, there was no evidence we were actually taking care of it. So I told them, you know what? If you don't know who to complain to, the right guy just walked up to your desk. He'll complain for you. In addition, I found something else at the community center I found quite frankly disturbing. When I went to use the men's locker room for a break, basically, during my tennis lesson, I saw a sign on the men's sauna, and it was dated August 28th, 2023, and it said the sauna is closed down for repairs indefinitely due to our inability to get parts and make repairs. And I know, being a council member and seeing the very positive reports on the financial performance of the community center, that just didn't seem right to me. So I decided to follow up with the town manager and find out what was going on. And it turns out that we are having a capital improvement project to repair the saunas. Why do I think that's worthwhile reporting to you? Because that's not a capital improvement project. Neither is replacing a light bulb. If something's
Mr.
not working...
Mr. Mayor, point of order. This is supposed to be current events, not Councilman Bowen. Well, when going on talking about capital improvements and complaints and so on and so forth, which, by the way, I think he voted against improvements at the community center, if I'm correct.
Okay. Point of order taken. If we could, if you could complete your report, and let's not get into capital improvements.
I was completing my report. Couldn't be more current. This was Monday night, December 4th. It's the 6th. What I wanted to tell people, the cost for repairs of $68,000 seems outrageous to me. And I've asked for the opportunity to inspect and take a look. Once again, we took the responsibility.
Councilmember
Bowen, that center.
Councilmember Bowen, the mayor ruled on Councilmember Solomon's point of order saying to move off the discussion of capital projects.
If you That's could, false. He said finish your report.
I said finish your report, but please not include the capital improvement discussion or the financial discussion.
It's completely germane to what we're talking about. All of our reporting needs to be consistent. When we report good results, we need to see good results. And this is an area in which our financial reporting and the real life experience, not a council member, but a resident.
Council member Bowen, this is still continuing to talk
I'm a member
about what the mayor ruled on regarding the point of order.
We can talk about
the
football games.
Regarding the point of order.
And we can talk Councilmember
Bowen.
We can't talk about our jobs.
Mr. Mayor, can you please silence Councilman Bowen, or do we need to go through our procedures for censure?
Councilmember Bowen, can you just please finish your without?
I'm done.
Thank you. Other reports? I received an email this past week that I wanted to share. It says, Dear Mayor Winfield, I wish to express my appreciation for the friendly and capable staff of the Oro Valley Magistrate Court. As a first-time juror, I was very impressed with their efforts to ensure we were comfortable and well-briefed on court proceedings. As a member of the jury, I could not have asked for better, more positive experience. And I wanted to share that email from a resident and their experience with our court and express appreciation to Judge Hazel and his staff. So thank you. Mr. Wilkins will present his report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A few items during the season of giving. I'd like to briefly recognize some charitable efforts and events that our dedicated staff have had throughout the year. In October, November, a food drive. We donated 900 pounds of food this year. December toy drive is happening now. In December and January, we have a shoe drive, and it's happening now at the community center. Donated 220 pairs of shoes last year, so hopefully we can top that. Parks and Rec, the annual charitable races, the 5K and annual COCO 5K race, raised more than $8,500 last year for the Towns and Rec Scholarship Fund. Of course, our police department has cops and kids, and where 25 local kids get to shop with a cop for gifts for their family. A partnership with Golder Ranch in our police department, the Guns and Hoses charity kickball tournament raised more than $8,000 last year for Project Grad. And then throughout the year, and just most recently, we had a blood drive, and we donated 65 pints of blood in 2023.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. The agenda will remain as posted. I do have one blue card for call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, Mayor and Council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come forward, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Anthony Ferrara.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members, my name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I've actually got three items tonight. Ms. Barrett, you reminded me I should we should talk about the CDO swim team, who ended up the boys ended up second, the girls ended up fourth in the state. Many individual state champions as well, state runners up. They did really well this year. My son was on a relay last year, and they won, but. Again, this year they did great too. We also, as a member of I'm a member of the fast swim team as well. I'm a meet director. We had a very successful meet at the Oro Valley Aquatic Center. The staff, the lifeguards were great. Even we had a rain delay at a certain point, but everybody was great. Hundreds of kids from across the state. We actually had teams from Wyoming and Oregon. So hopefully the hotels were full and the restaurants were full, helping Oro Valley. So, and then also I'd like to talk about the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene development project. I don't know where it is at this point, but if it comes before you, I encourage you to encourage them that the property was purchased as a residential piece of property. It should remain a residential piece of property. There's not that much of it. It's a really valuable part of a neighborhood, and they bought 10 acres of it, and you know, I think it should just remain residential property. Thank you.
I'm going to close call to audience. So we'll go to presentations. Mr. Standish, item one.
Presentation from All Aboard Arizona.
Thank you. Mr. Todd Liebman, president of All Aboard Arizona, will present this item. Mr. Liebman.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. It's my privilege to be here and talk to you a little bit about passenger rail in Arizona and where we're going. And it's kind of an exciting time. Will this advance the slides? Is that... Oh, great, perfect, thank you. Yeah, again, I'm Todd Liebman, and I'm the president of All Aboard Arizona, and I live in Sierra Vista, so I drove up this evening, and I'm really happy to be here. So I'll go to my first slide. I just want to emphasize that now is the time for passenger rail in Arizona. Every survey indicates that the people of Arizona want passenger rail. There's strong bipartisan support, Amtrak has provided tremendous support both for the Sun Corridor between Tucson and Phoenix and also for the Daily Sunset Limited. And I'm pleased to report tonight that we have excellent news, and that is that the state of Arizona has been selected for the Corridor ID program. And so we're in the door. This is for phase one. And once we're in the door, though, phase two and phase three will follow. So this was really an important announcement, and I'm really happy about that. The formal announcement will be made on Friday, but the Representative Stanton has announced it. So we're in the door. There are also two grants for the Sunset Limited as well, and we'll hear about those on Friday. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we get those. And again, this is the Federal Railroad Administration's long-distance study is currently underway, and I happen to be a stakeholder representative in that study, and it's exciting because there's a lot of improvements that have come out in favor of Arizona, including links north of Phoenix to Flagstaff. So this is really an exciting time. This map sort of shows the Sun Corridor and what we're talking about. And again, we're really talking about probably a third main track from Tucson to Picacho Junction, and then upgrades to the track north to Phoenix, and then the reopening of the Welton Branch. But I want to highlight that passenger rail brings a lot of benefits. And one of the things that it also does is it has synergies with freight service as well. So the opening of the Welton Branch will be a fantastic opportunity for freight service between the Port of Los Angeles and Phoenix. But passenger service is really a catalyst for economic development in communities. And if you want to see an example of that, the mayor of Meridian, Mississippi, has said that they planted the flag at the train station that are dying downtown, and that all the economic development in downtown flows from the fact that they revitalized the train station. This is really fantastic economic development opportunity. It contributes to mobility, and so we're really excited about this. The Sun Corridor, in particular, goes to all the right places. It links downtown. U of A is easily accessible. It'll run right through Tempe for Arizona State and then downtown Phoenix. And so people will be able to get on the train, travel conveniently. Anybody that's driven I-10 knows what a difficult drive that is. But fortunately, you know, with the train, I think it'll really contribute really dramatically to congestion mitigation and really provide a useful benefit. The Sunset Limited as well. Amtrak has two grants. One is for the daily Sunset Limited, and the other is to get it back through Phoenix again. And once that happens, that will link the whole region to the national rail system on a daily basis, and that's really exciting as well. So we're really hopeful about that, and hopefully on Friday we should get the word, hopefully Sunset Limited made it. The other tri-weekly train apparently did make it, the Cardinal, so we're hopeful that the Sunset Limited will as well. So I guess, you know, just to conclude my presentation, rail passenger service provides really an unmatched opportunity. It's really congestion mitigation for I-10. It's really unmatched in its potential for economic development. It's the greenest form of transportation in this area, obviously needs that. And we're a growing region too. Arizona is experiencing tremendous growth, and the United States is experiencing tremendous growth. So now is really the time for passenger rail. And again, it supports long-term, sustainable, lasting employment and tax revenue and economic development. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but again, we're really excited about the opportunities for passenger rail.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Liebman. Council, do you have questions for Mr. Liebman? Okay, Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
I am really excited to see this developing. My dad used to work for Southern Pacific Railroad years ago, and the primary way that we traveled, particularly into the south, was by the Sunset Limited. So I am really wanting this to be very successful, and I would like to see this accomplished, because that drive from here to Phoenix it's cumbersome at the most, and whenever there's an accident, it's just almost impossible. So I'm really excited to see this happening, and I'll stay in touch to find out how this is progressing also.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Councilmember Green?
I think this is fantastic news. I mean, I've been kind of advocating for this from a low point for a number of years, and you've made me so happy. Any way we can help you, please let us know, because we would like to see this happen.
we really appreciate that. You know, a resolution of support is obviously, and I know you've signed on to the letter and everything, but any, you know, absolutely resolutions, that kind of thing. But also, if you ever have any, if there's anything we can do to support as well, we're here for you.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you for your presentation. Could you scroll back to the map, please?
Sure.
The northwest of Tucson, is that a proposed new station in Marana or an existing station?
Well, so the Sunset Limited does not stop there, so it'll be a new station. And that's one of the neat things is that could be a catalyst for development there. You know, who knows, residential development, whatever. So tremendous opportunities for affordable housing, new housing, and really an opportunity for the area.
Is there any proposed access to Sky Harbor Airport here?
Yes.
Perhaps in the blue section?
Absolutely, yes. The train would serve Sky Harbor Airport. Hopefully the, I think it's the 24th in Washington where the car rentals and the other things are. That would basically be part of the station complex. So it would directly serve that. It really does go to all the right places.
In my current understanding, I've taken the train once. There's 3 times a week service to Los Angeles. What would the overall upgrade be? It'd be once a day? Is that what's proposed?
Well, so the Sunset Limited would be hopefully daily. So that would be once a day. And then they would add an additional frequency between Tucson and Los Angeles. So there would be 2 trains between Tucson and Los Angeles every day, probably 1 day train and 1 overnight train, which is what the Sunset is now. And then, of course, there would be initially three round trips in addition to that between Tucson, Phoenix, and Buckeye.
And then for our area, it's pretty exciting to think about a station in Marana. Is there any idea that would run both directions to Los Angeles and New Orleans? Or Okay, and it would be, you know, 3 times a day, perhaps?
Yeah.
Or
correct, yeah. So so you'd have the Sunset Limited would be daily, so the eastbound would be one trip east to Tucson and then on to El Paso and then the rest of the country, like you indicated. And then but there would be obviously an additional trip to there would be four additional trips to Tucson then, which that's a short ride, but it would, yeah. And then three the other way.
No, down Oracle, it's not necessarily a short ride. It might be kind of nice.
That's
to take
true.
The train. And the final question I had is, you know, basically for those of us that would be using this, can you recommend anything other than, you know, Arizona State? Are there the route through Phoenix? What would be some of the other things that someone from, you know, northern suburb of Tucson say, wow, you can get to this part of Phoenix pretty quickly. Are you familiar with the route through Phoenix, basically?
Yeah, so the stations haven't been firmly established, but there certainly would be a station in downtown Phoenix. Perhaps the old Union Station would be prime for redevelopment. And if you've seen what they've done in Denver with the Union Station up there, that could revitalize that whole part of Phoenix. So, and that's what it did in Denver.
Thank you very much. I give you my full support as well. This would be a great amenity for us to have in Oral Valley if it access to a Marana train station.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. And as you mentioned, all the mayors have signed a letter of support for this. And we'll certainly take that resolution of support. We'll give that consideration, Mr. Liebman. But we appreciate you coming and making the presentation this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the consent agenda. Councilmember Bowen has asked that items A, E, and G be pulled from the consent agenda. And Vice Mayor Barrett has asked that items B and F be pulled from the consent agenda. So that leaves, so I move to approve consent agenda items C, D, and F.
Second.
Been seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go by these in order. So item A was pulled by Councilmember Bowen. Councilmember Bowen?
That's a question for the town manager regarding the number of memberships at the community center. Last meeting we reported it was 3,200. Do you have any more to share with us? Like, for example, how much that's increased in the last 3 months? What's the context for 3,200?
I have no further update at this point. Is there specific what the updates are since the last that minutes, what it is now?
Yes, yep. We confirm it's 3,200, though, right?
Yes, at that point it was 3,200.
Thank you. That's my question on item A.
Okay. With no further discussion, I move to approve item A of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Item B was pulled by Vice Mayor Barrett. Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes. I would just like to posit this for the town council's consideration. I'm not overly pushing for it, but for a long time I've wondered why we take our council break in August, because here school is off in June and July. So for both the council members and the town staff, June and July are the times when school's off, and August school's in session. And then in addition to that, the election has been moved. It used to be at the end of August, and I was told originally that the council break was made to correspond with the election, but the election has been moved, and now it's closer to the beginning of August, if I'm correct. And so we actually have to have a meeting in August to review the election results anyway. So what I'm wondering is if we could consider maybe taking out the July 17th meeting and then having the August 7th meeting and then leaving out the August 21st meeting, since that's typically aligned with the League of Cities and Towns. So keeping the same number of meetings, but switching from July 17th for the break or for the meeting to August 7th for the meeting, so that the meeting aligns with when the kids are in school. So, I mean, I'm not overly pushing for it, but I've wondered for a long time, and I thought I'd just posit to the council and see what you all think.
Discussion? Councilmember Solomon?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine with me. I just would like to check with any staff members or if there's any particular reason why traditionally we've taken off in August. I don't know of any specific reason, to just see if there's any input on that.
Mr. Wilkins?
All I could add is that it's been historical. The town clerk might have a little more insight.
Mr. Standish? On history.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I don't really honestly think that there is a very specific reason on why they chose August. I think one of the main reasons back then was due to the League of Arizona Cities and Towns Conference. But, of course, that continues to move. So, yeah.
Vice Mayor, Clerk Standish just informed me the election is on August 6th. He believes it will take 8 to 9 days to canvass the results. So there would still need to be a special session called in August under your proposal.
Okay, well, that would be okay. I mean, I think that the main thing is it would be nice to have the meetings in August and have July 17th available so that more, you know, more travel could be done when children are out of school. But I mean, it's not a huge deal one way or the other. You know, we can make it all work. I just have always wondered, why do the kids go back to school and then we take our council break? So
I'm not hearing any objections to July, right? Okay, and then we'll make adjustments for August. Mr. Standish?
Mr. Mayor, if I could, just to make sure I'm clear on this. Were you proposing to also cancel the August 21st date?
I would say as long as... I think it's a matter of it, that it doesn't interfere with the Arizona League Cities and Towns Conference.
Okay.
So if it doesn't conflict, then I think we're fine with that date.
Sure. And then just what Mr. Rothschild said about the canvas of the results, then there still might be a need then to call
right.
a special quick session on that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Mr. Standish, when you were giving the report on meetings, there was the July 10th of this year, January 10th of next year. So it was, is that in this? Is that what we're looking to approve?
Oh, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
The All currently right. stated in there, it's currently attached in there for proposing January 10th, which is the second Wednesday, and January 24th as the fourth Wednesday.
So I'm not hearing any change to that. Okay. Vice Mayor, you want to make a motion?
Okay, so did we decide we would leave in the August 21st? Because originally I was thinking we would go ahead and still cancel August 21st to keep the number roughly the same. But, Mr. Mayor, did you say
we could keep it if needed.
Okay, then I move to amend the agenda to take off July 17th and as the council break and include the August meetings.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item E, which was pulled by Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. Consent agenda item E has to do with the Oral Valley legislative agenda for the 2024 Arizona legislative session. And I had a couple of questions for the mayor, because our policy has been that we have a unified front, and the unified front goes through the mayor as he's our legislative liaison. And I just had a question. Did you have a chance to participate in the voting on these resolutions from the League of Cities and Towns on August 31st?
I did.
Regarding BFED-2, which is redevelopment incentives, and BFED means budget, financial, economic development, and BFED-3, municipal improvement districts, I note from the reporting that it passed by a majority vote. Did we vote yes or no on these? Do you recall?
Voted yes.
And as you are our liaison and our representative, just wanted to ask you the question. Both of these, in my mind, they actually curtail resident involvement in the process. In terms of redevelopment incentives, they allow developers that are redeveloping property to request reductions in their tax rates while they're trying to get the project improved. As for municipal improvement districts, what's involved here is taking away a petition process. Normally, before a municipal improvement district could be established someplace like Oral Valley, you would have to get the approval of half of the property owners. And if they didn't, then you couldn't establish the district. And I just want to ask the mayor, in terms of resident participation, do you think that the removal of the petition process is a good idea?
So what I understand, Councilmember Bowen and other members of the council and others listening, is that what Camp Verde was bringing forward was that there was a change in 2016 to this process, which they were wanting to readdress. So the process is basically that the municipality would post the notice for this municipal improvement district across that affected district. So the property owners within that district would be notified. There's a 15-day period for protest, so that if there are any landowners within that proposed municipal improvement district that are not in agreement with what's being proposed by the municipality, if there is 50% or more, then the item is dead. If there's not a protest, then the municipality goes forward with whatever the particular project is. So it could be a road improvement or storm sewer or some other kind of infrastructure project. As the town goes forward with the planning, design, and so on and so forth, what this change then required was that a petition would then be required. And so what has happened and what potentially could happen, even though they posted it, they went through the protest period, and there was no protest, and they went forward with their investment in terms of planning, design, and so on and so forth, there was a stipulation added, kind of a fourth step, that a petition period. So after they'd done all of this work, their project could essentially be shut down. So it's not that there wasn't public involvement. There was just this added petition requirement. So Camp Verde had asked the other municipalities for their support to have that amended. Whether that happens or not, that's up to the legislator. But I believe it was a unanimous vote, Councilmember Bowen, and so yes, I did vote to support that.
I'd like to report to the public, it's in the municipal documents as it passed by a majority vote.
And so, in consultation with staff, with both of these, they've explained that we don't foresee a specific use of this proposed legislation in Oro Valley currently, but that it may be an additional tool that may be helpful in the future. I think that because of our participation in the Arizona League Cities and Towns, so for example, I serve on one of the committees on the Law Enforcement, Veterans Affairs, and Courts Committee. And there are other committees that other members of council can participate in and may participate in, but it's in these committees where these resolutions are brought forward. Some die in committee. Others then go to the body, and in that particular case, they can either be approved or not approved. In this particular case, these resolutions were approved by the majority. In most cases, it's a unanimous, not always, but generally unanimous. And so this is what we typically then, as a town, then we adopt what has been adopted by all these other municipalities in terms of our support for these resolutions.
Thank you for your explanation, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to explain why I would vote against this. The petition, after the detailed design and engineering, provides information to the people being petitioned that's not available up to that point. Maybe you've seen a cartoon up to that point, but when you see the actual design, you might change your mind. So I believe that that's exactly the reason why the petition's in there in the first place. You don't just inspect something once, you keep inspecting it as it moves forward to make sure that you still approve it. And I just wanted to explain to the public why I will vote no against this. I think that it's a bad idea for Oro Valley, and they need to show us more of why they need to get rid of a petition process that was only recently added. Also, I had requested the opportunity to ask the Economic Development Director, Paul Melcher, a few questions about some legislation that was recommended for us regarding short-term rentals. And thank you, Paul. I had noted that in what we're asked to approve tonight, there's the possibility that the state is going to provide the abilities for towns to basically to regulate the density, distance between, and the total number of short-term rentals in a town. And the question I wanted to ask you, based upon our current staffing, I've heard reports that we know the number of short-term rentals, but do we know our short-term rentals on a map? Do we know where they're located in the town or simply the number that we have?
Mayor Winfield, members of council, yes. With our tracking program, it comes with a map, so we have every one of the short-term rentals plotted so that we could determine density based on that mapping tool.
And I wanted to give you some time to think about this. In terms of enforcing this, if something like this was ever to become a possibility, would we be able to enforce this with our current staff level?
Mayor, members of council, I'm going to say it depends. And I'm not being obtuse, but it goes back to the question of how the statute might be developed. If it's a may, then the town wouldn't be obligated to adopt it. If it's a shall, then we would. But you'd also have to take into consideration that not all towns have adopted ordinances regulating short-term rentals. The real question would be if the town chose to adopt some provision, if it's authorized by statute, then we'd do that analysis and figure out what that looked like. So it's hard to tell at this point based on the current numbers, but it also depends on how the statute's framed.
Thank you very much. That was my question. Appreciate it.
Okay, I move to approve consent item F.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any additional discussion?
I believe that was E we were talking about.
Excuse me, you're correct. I'm going to amend that. I move to approve consent agenda item E.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Nicholson. Any more discussion? Thank you for that clarification, Councilmember Bowen. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it 6-1. We'll go to consent agenda item F. Or Vice Mayor Barrett asked that to be pulled.
That's right, yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay,
I believe it's.
I'm sorry. I failed to look at my note. Okay. Consent agenda item G. Councilmember Bowen asked that that be pulled.
Thank you. And this agenda has to do with our designation of assured water supply. And my concern was this was added very recently, well after the 1 week normal agenda, but just a couple of days ago. And Peter, Mr. Abraham, you know, why does our AWS designation need to be updated at this time?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, the town's designation of assured water supply, it's a 100-year designation. It needs to be renewed every 10 years. We're approaching that 10-year mark. In fact, the 31st of this month will be that 10-year mark. So I have to just resubmit my application to renew our designation because now it's not really a 100-year assured water supply. Since we've used 10 years of it, it's now 90-year. So the Arizona Department of Water Resources requires us to resubmit looking at our hydrology and looking at our groundwater usage over the last 10 years to renew that designation of assured water supply. The reason you've seen this so late, that we've been working for the past year with a consultant on this application. We were ready to submit the application last week. It was Thursday, and the director of ADWR said, Peter, under whose authority do you have to sign this application? I said, mine? And they said, well, we'd like your elected body to provide a resolution granting you the authority to sign this. So post haste, I contacted the town clerk and said, hey, can I get something on, because this is the last council meeting this calendar year. So we were able to shoehorn it in there real quick just so I can have the authority to sign that application to submit it prior to the end of the year.
Hey, I appreciate that, and I thought it was likely a scenario like that. Is there anything, since the assurance isn't posted to the agenda item, is there anything that you noted in our recent assurance that we, the council, should be aware about, or was it kind of business as usual?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's why this council body, even my Water Utility Commission, it hasn't been brought up to them. This is one of many business as usual components we do. It's a very important one. But, for me as the Water Utility Director, this is just another core function that I perform to keep our water utility in a good standing with the state.
I'd just like to say I appreciate you're moving quickly because this is our last council meeting of the year and getting it on this agenda. So thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate your support and the town clerk and the town
manager.
That's
my question.
Get it in there. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. So I know during the budget discussions, there were discussions about having a report done and some research done to update this. Has that report been completed and is that part of this application?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, that report is completed and it's part of this application.
Okay. I, for one, would sort of like to see that report and have that information, maybe even have it brought to council. I mean, I'm fine with you submitting it to the state, and I think that that's important, especially given the timing and things, but I'd like to have the opportunity to just review that report, make sure that I understand it.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I'd be happy to provide a presentation, after we submitted it to go over what was included in that report. What does it mean for the town? What does it look like as terms of our 100-year designation, the status of our aquifer? I'd be happy to provide that information to council.
Yeah, so is there a deadline to submit this, or would it be possible for us to receive that and then provide the authorization?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, the deadline is the 31st of December for me to submit that application. So we do not want to miss that deadline to submit. And okay. Bear in mind, ADWR will be reviewing this application. I mean, I'm expecting this to be a 6 to 12-month process. By no means do I think we're complete. My past experiences with this body of work is there's a lot of dialogue with ADWR, a lot of vetting out of the information that we've provided. So it'd probably be a little premature to go through it right now, just because even though I'm submitting an application, that sounds very like finish line-ish. It's really the beginning of the race.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I still feel like I would like to have the report submitted and have the opportunity to review it. But thank you. That thanks for getting this on in a timely manner.
Councilmember Solomon.
Does the report accurately reflect the current status of the water resources available to the town of Oro Valley?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I believe it does. The original designation was 100 years. That's us utilizing over 13,000 feet of groundwater a year. We've used 5,000 acre feet or less a year. I mean, we're just so much lower than what we're designated to provide. We're in outstanding shape.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Councilmember Bowen.
I'd like to thank the Vice Mayor. I thought maybe I was the only one who had concern about this joining late. I'm frequently asked about what a 100-year water supply is. I see it on social media, and I don't know what it is, even though I've been on council. So any kind of presentation you can put together for us where we focus on that topic and we can ask an expert questions is much appreciated. My wanting to move forward was simply to support the deadline. But in terms of having the information tonight, I would have read it. You know, I would have appreciated having that opportunity, but it wasn't asked for, so it couldn't be expected. But if you could bring that back and present it to us, I would be very happy to listen to it. That's my comment, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I move to approve consent agenda item G.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any additional discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abraham. I will go to regular agenda. Mr. Standish, item 1.
Nomination and election of Vice Mayor.
I move to elect Melanie Barrett as Vice Mayor.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green.
Point of order, I think we need to move to nominate.
I move to nominate Melanie Barrett as Vice Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Congratulations, Vice Mayor Barrett. We'll go to future agenda items. Vice Mayor?
Mr. Mayor, I have two. First, I'd like to put as a future agenda item review of the water report and the 100-year water supply.
Second.
And second, I'd like to add, discussion and possible action regarding the housing study and future items related thereto.
Second.
Okay. Any additional agenda items? Seeing none, I move to adjourn the regular session.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Green. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to our study session. And Mr. Standish, item 1 of the study session.
Discussion regarding the Town of Oro Valley's housing study, including a data assessment and survey analysis.
Mr. Danny Court with Elliott D. Pollock and Company will present this item. And planning manager, looks like, okay. Paul Melcher and Ms. Sims will be available for questions. And this item is for discussion only tonight.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Danny Court. I'm an economist and a partner at Elliott D. Pollock & Company. We are located in Scottsdale, Arizona, and have served the state of Arizona in terms of economics and housing and demographics since 1987. We are here to present a summary presentation of our housing conditions and gap assessment. The purpose of the assignment was to fulfill action item in the town's current general plan and previous strategic plan, also to prepare for the next 10-year plan, which a housing element is required by state law. Tonight's presentation is to focus on Oro Valley's housing gaps and opportunities. I wanted to quickly introduce our team. It is not just Elliott D. Paul & Company, but just real quickly, our firm, again, established in 1987, and we are focused very strongly throughout the state of Arizona, having had the opportunity to work with nearly every community and county in the state. Housing has been brought to the forefront of many communities in the state, including Oro Valley. Our firm has been privileged to work with several communities in the last several years to address housing issues. This includes many communities in northern Arizona, such as Flagstaff, Sedona, Winslow, in the western part of the state, like Lake Havasu City. We did a deep dive housing assessment and strategy with the city of Sedona, in also Verde Valley communities, such as Cottonwood, Clarkdale, Jerome, and the city of Mesa. So we're pleased to be able to bring our methodology and research to bear with the town of Oro Valley. I'm very privileged to have worked with West Group Research over the past 8 years on assignments that include surveys. So part of the scope of work here was to conduct several surveys of the town residents, business owners, and employees who work in Oro Valley but live outside of the town. West Group is Arizona's longest standing market research firm. They have served the state of Arizona for over 60 years. There's a list here on the slide of several assignments. This includes municipalities such as Eloy, Queen Creek, the City of Phoenix, and Tempe, quasi-governmental agencies such as the Maricopa Association of Governments, state departments like the Arizona Office of Tourism, and enterprises such as Valley Metro. I am going to bring Kathy DeBoer of West Group Research up here to describe the surveys and the methodologies that were used for that.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. We are very delighted to walk through the survey results with you. As mentioned, there were several surveys that were conducted. West Group specifically set up and conducted the telephone survey. Its purpose was obviously to collect information from residents asking about various housing issues and gather their perceptions and understand their priorities. Phone survey was collected using a random sample of telephone and landlines with phone numbers from the Oro Valley zip code area. So all residents were screened to make sure that they lived within those zip codes listed. The target was 401 surveys, which has an average interview length of a little over 15 minutes. The data were weighted to accurately represent the general population. We put in quotas and targets for age, but to keep control on costs, we apply some weights after the fact just to make sure that opinions are balanced on key demographics. So the overall margin of error of the study is 4.9% at a 95% level of confidence. Two additional surveys were completed. They were executed by the town staff. There was an online survey, and then there was also a business and workforce online survey that was a kind of a branch off of the resident survey. These were just made available through a number of postings that the town notified residents of, not only of the study that we were doing, so if they did reach a phone call, they would respond to it, but also invited anyone who wanted to go online and complete the same questions. And so those are results are also available as a supplement to the more statistically reliable telephone survey. And then there was a small business and workforce online survey that Danny mentioned as well to gain some input, again, from employers and employees who work in but do not live in Oro Valley, again, just as a supplement to the main survey, just to complete the picture as much as possible. And we'll just go through a few highlights. If you've seen the full report, it's a very broad and extensive report. We just are grabbing those points that are most meaningful in light of the full discussion tonight. We ask residents how concerned about they are about the cost of housing in Oro Valley. And the blue is the phone. The gray is what the online responses are. See the telephone survey, we had over half of the population, almost 60%, indicated they are at least somewhat concerned about the costs of housing in Oro Valley. We ask about what might be the barriers to home ownership that either they've experienced or they are understanding. Number one is the concern about the average home price. 54% of phone participants indicated that was the number one barrier to home ownership. The higher interest rates that have been experiencing, remembering that this study was conducted also earlier in the fall. And then saving for down payment is a challenge for many, and lack of housing supply. We did ask folks, because of the high cost of housing or the cost of housing in Oro Valley, what was their likelihood of moving out of Oro Valley due to the cost of housing? We found that 10%, 11% indicate they're at least somewhat likely to consider moving out of Oro Valley because of the cost of housing. And what's most insightful here is looking at the most vulnerable residents. So residents who rent, 24% of them said that they were very or nearly certain that they would need to leave Oro Valley due to costs of housing. Younger residents, those under age of 35, specifically residents who live in 85704, and then households with children. So there is concern among especially key groups about housing affordability. Then looking at employees, nearly half of the Oro Valley owners and workers also feel that housing costs as rent is too high in Oro Valley. Another 20 to 27% say rent is affordable, but that home ownership is out of reach. So those are laid out for you here as well, showing that the average mortgage and rent is too high in Oro Valley as about half of both of those populations. And then we asked them to agree with a series of statements about housing challenges and asked them, again, to use that strongly agree to strongly disagree. And the residents were most likely to say that they are strongly agree or agree that there is a lack of financial attainable housing for teachers, police, first responders, retail, service employees, or entry-level professionals. That's 47% of the population agreed with that. And then also closely behind that is there's a lack of financially affordable housing for seniors, veterans, or persons with disabilities. So those were the two areas where a significant proportion of residents are concerned about the impact of housing costs. And then looking at the perceived needs, what do they feel that they are most needing in Oro Valley? Single-family homes is most often felt to be a high need, but then looking for townhomes and duplexes, secondary residential units that may be built on an existing lot, and then working your way down with folks feeling that manufactured homes, mobile homes, were the lowest need for the area. And then we asked about their preference in terms of rental products and how acceptable they view each one of these. And you can see that the most acceptable options among residents were detached one- and two-story rental homes or attached one- and two-story rental homes such as duplexes and townhomes. just in time, my coughing is starting, so I can... I think we'll move on to Danny's, and then I can answer questions after everything is completed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. And the reason I requested that she go first in terms of the survey was that the survey was a component in the housing needs and gap assessment. So in terms of looking at, we're basically trying to our job as economists is to look at the data. So some of those data points were survey responses, and that helped us craft some of the recommendations that we'll find at the end of this presentation. So in terms of like the housing snapshot, Oro Valley does have less housing diversity. If you compare that to Pima County or the state of Arizona, you'll see, not surprising, there's a higher percentage of single-family detached homes in the town, and a lower percentage of attached-type products like apartments. And then the manufactured home inventory is substantially lower than the broader region in the state. And then there's just a note here. This is just, you know, it's the first of several data points when we're trying to look at affordability that we know that from on the private market side, a market solution, that density and attached units do tend to create more affordability. So just looking at supply alone is one potential data point. We looked at your occupancy status for in terms of the census. Occupancy status does help to point toward how many seasonal and second homes you have, because those are not counted as occupied, even though they may be occupied for several months of the year. They're counted as vacant. So then, when we look at the vacancy status, we do see that the majority of those unoccupied homes in Oro Valley, nearly 40% or nearly 1,100 units, are identified as seasonal, recreational, or occasional use, those second-time vacation homes, which again reduces the supply of available housing for permanent residents. The home ownership rates over the last two decades have decreased in Oro Valley, but are substantially higher than the county or the state of Arizona. So very high home ownership rate here in the town. Real quick look at housing incomes, which will dovetail into housing affordability. We see that over the last 4 years in Oro Valley, household incomes have increased by 21%. So basically have outpaced the high rate of inflation that we've experienced, which is a good sign. As of 2021, the latest reported data from the U.S. Census American Community Survey, the median household income in Oro Valley is just over $92,500. Keep that number in mind as we look at what houses cost in the town. So I'll spend a little bit of extra time on this slide because there's a lot of data here. So this chart plots single-family home prices, manufactured home prices, and condominium townhome prices in the town of Oro Valley. If you were able to purchase a home before 2018 in Oro Valley, congratulations. That is the inflection point at which we saw houses prices escalate rapidly. This is not an Oro Valley unique trend. This happened in many communities throughout the state and across the country. So single-family home prices increased 57% over the last 4 years. When we compare that to inflation of 18%, that's a very quick gauge of whether we had a supply issue or not. When house prices increase more than inflation, you have a housing shortage. That's your quick rule of thumb. So now, as of 2022, the year end, the median home price for a single-family detached home was just under $617,000 in Oro Valley. A condominium unit, which also increased 57% at just over $353,000, and then manufactured home prices also increased dramatically. They're up 62%, but again, you see the relative price points of each of these, where single-family detached is the least affordable, followed by condominiums, and then the manufactured home supply, which we saw in a previous slide. There's very little inventory here in the town. This slide is on the new home market. So what are new home builders building in the town of Oro Valley? The graph, there's a lot of data there, but those are all of the different subdivisions within Oro Valley, their price points, and the square footages that are being offered in the current offerings of new home products. So you see it clustered here. Very little product offered under $500,000, under the $500,000 price point. When we looked at the last 12 months of new home closings, nearly 60% of new homes were sold between $500,000 and $650,000. Another 30% were sold between $650,000 and $1 million. So to put that into perspective, if you to afford a $500,000 home at current interest rates, you need about $137,000 household income. To afford a $650,000 home, that would be nearly $180,000 household income. I did want to touch on interest rates. Those are things that are outside of our control. Those are macroeconomic conditions. We do expect interest rates to come down. The timing is unknown. The consensus of economists is that rates may start to decrease as early as the first or second quarter of next year. So we plugged in another consensus forecast of stabilized rates at 5%. So we're still looking at about $105,000 salary to afford a $500,000 home and $136,000 to afford that $650,000 home. So comparing that to the median household income currently in Oro Valley of $92,500, and this again is a phenomenon that's happening across the state, is that there is a big majority of current homeowners that actually could not afford the home they live in if they had to purchase it today. This again is just to reiterate that this is happening across the region and across the country. We are at low levels of affordability, not seen since the housing bubble that occurred in 2006. The housing opportunity index is basically read as, if I'm a family and I earn the median income, what percentage of the housing stock is affordable to me? So right now we are sitting at below, Greater Phoenix is sitting at below 30%, and Greater Tucson, so these are reported at the metro levels, Greater Tucson is sitting at right around 40%. So the median household, the median family, that family earning the median income, about 40% of the housing stock is affordable to them. Addressing rents, it's basically in the same boat. Rents have increased 31% in the town of Oro Valley over just the last 2 years. So as of the end of 2020, $1,100 was the average rent in Oro Valley, and that's nearly $1,500 now. If we break it out by unit mix, studio apartments are the least expensive, but there are only 24 of them in the town. You need a required income of just under $40,000. One and two bedrooms are the most prevalent in the town. A one-bedroom apartment requires an income of just over $50,000 to comfortably afford, and a two-bedroom apartment, the household income needs to be over $60,000. When we're looking at just want to caveat, this is Pima County data, but because it's reported at the county level, but we do expect Oro Valley occupations to probably be commanding similar wages. So these are looking at essential workers, service workers, our teachers, our firefighters, our nurses, paramedics, salespeople, hotel workers, and things like that. So plotting the wages that they currently command, the next two columns are what they could afford. And what we're using is what the Housing and Urban Development Department uses, and it's widely adopted, is 30% or less of your income spent on housing costs is considered affordable. So you see here from lowest income, just under $29,000, up to a registered nurse making over $82,000, and the monthly affordable housing costs that they have. So when we compare that again to what is available in terms of rent in Oro Valley, or what the mortgage rate would be, which again you saw the median resale price of $600,000, or a new home at $550,000, out of reach as a single income earner for all of these occupations, and then rent basically only affordable to those making at least $50,000. So then we get to our gap, and basically this goes back to what percentage of current residents, either as an owner or a renter, are overburdened by their housing costs, are paying more than 30% of their income toward their housing cost. For owners, there are nearly 2,600 households, which is 16.3% of the ownership group that is overburdened by their housing costs. And then renters, nearly 2,000 renter households in Oro Valley are currently overburdened by rent. So that's nearly 40% of all of your renters are currently overburdened by their rent. It's really important also to stratify this housing burden by income group to see where you can find a solution. You see here too that it is, and this is very common in most communities, that those households that make the least amount of income are the most cost burdened. So you see that households making under $20,000, 100% of them are currently overburdened by their rent. As you move up the income gap, you see that starts to go down. But you still have even renter households making over $75,000 that are also overburdened. But I'll just spend a little bit more time on here. So because this will dovetail into the recommendations, there is no private market solution for anyone making less than $50,000 a year in the rental or ownership market. So if you were to, if you wanted to address that need, it would take public investment. That doesn't mean that the municipality has to invest money into it, but it means tax credit dollars that we're applying for low-income housing tax credits, trying to find something like that. When you're making under $20,000, that is a public housing unit that would be managed by either a municipality or a county or some other agency. So just keep that in mind that depending on how the town wants to move forward, again, this could just be as simple as introducing a developer of affordable housing to a suitable piece of land that the town would show support in. Having them develop an affordable housing unit that does not need to be managed by the town, but there's lots of different options. On the ownership side too, you're probably looking at a down payment assistance type of program, or you can actually develop single family detached homes or attached homes and have an ownership type of program, probably more focused on those making at least $50,000 a year or more. Again, when you get below that, you're into government subsidized type programs. Part of the assignment was to look at how housing interacts with retail demand and also local tax revenue generation. So this is a model that we've created just to show that density is the number one predictor of driving either retail demand or tax revenue. It overcomes any sort of gap between if you're a homeowner and you make, so like in this example, we showed a single family homeowner of making about $129,000 or a renter making about $75,000, which is what you'd need to afford one of the newer multifamily, in one of the newer apartment communities. And so we basically just plotted, okay, on say a 10 or 12 acre piece of land, you could fit 250 apartments on the same piece of land. If it were single family detached, you could fit about 57 units there. So even with the higher salaries, because you have a lower unit count, an apartment development, a 250 unit apartment development is probably enough disposable income from those new residents to support just under 12,000 square feet of new retail development. Or that could mean supporting existing retail development and filling up space. So you bring more tenants in, they bring their salaries and disposable income, they create demand for retail. And this is taking their salary and their disposable income, running it through the U.S. Consumer Expenditure Survey in these tip types of categories, and this is the retail demand that comes out of it. So by comparison, if you were to instead have a single family detached subdivision on that same piece of land and generate 57 homes, even at those higher salaries, that's retail demand. That model comes out to about 3,600 square feet of retail demand. So the focus of what's that household income, it's important to know it, but to understand that density overcomes that household, that extra household income by many multiples. And then this just also is true for town finances. So again, this is taking a 10-acre site and placing different types of residential products on here, from all the way from the most dense, a 4-story apartment product. Garden apartment basically means about a three-story product, the single family built to rent, that's typically a 1-story, maybe 2-story, and then into detached products. So those new residents, because of the density, even with lower household incomes, generates many multiples in terms of town taxes, sales taxes, lease taxes, utility taxes, state shared revenue from new population, and property tax as well, because it's a more intense development type. So this is our final slide, and this is the bulk of our recommendations. If your desire is to try to address the housing gap and affordability issue in the town, these are our main recommendations. We do recommend that you support more rental products. That can mean anything. It could be single family detached product. It could be attached product, townhomes, duplexes, 2- and 3-story apartments. We do note that from the resident survey, you saw, that there was a concern about affordability. But then the question in terms of what type of housing product is needed most, single family detached was the most popular. But there is no private market solution in terms of if you add more single family detached homes, it's not going to affect the affordability scenario in your town. So building consensus here will be very important, which is why there were some of those follow-up questions. Okay, but if you did have rental product, if you did have see attached, if you did see apartments, where's the most acceptable that those could be? So that's kind of where that's where these the recommendations will need to be vetted through the town, try to meet some consensus. Okay, we do know there's an affordability problem. We do know that the private market solution is density, which means attached product. What type of product is the most acceptable here and where? But we do recommend that you support more. This is all about increasing the supply of available homes, and the smaller attached product is the most affordable, at least in the private, in the private sector. Sounds a little bit off base, but we recommend that you conduct a retail gap analysis to determine future development potential. We did not undertake this, but at first glance, you have just under 1,500 lots left available for single family homes. So you're nearing a build out. You're probably 5 to 8 years away from a build out of single family homes. And there were very few suitable sites zoned for multifamily that are of the size that a multifamily developer needs to have the critical mass of size and scale to be attracted to the site. So you also have 265 acres of vacant commercial land. So is that enough commercial land? Is it too much commercial land? So the retail gap analysis would help determine that. If you have too much commercial land, it doesn't matter how much you want. If there's no demand for it, it'll just lay vacant. So if you can allow, if there is an excess of commercial land, you can allow some more residential products, and it actually helps balance it out. You add more residential, it's going to create more demand for commercial and start to balance that out. Commercial areas were also noted as one of the most acceptable places for apartments if they were to be approved. So, adding multifamily or attached products next to a commercial site as a buffer to less dense residential product. We do actually encourage that or consider that to allow more manufactured homes or similar affordable housing types in more areas. We noted that it's that those products are only allowed in one small area. It is becoming just, again, if you want the private market to address affordable housing, manufactured homes are becoming more and more popular as an ownership option. These are homes that are being built, and I encourage you to go tour some of those homes. Some of them you cannot tell if it's already been built, already been placed on the lot. Some of them are hard to tell that they've been manufactured or if they were built there. So there's some innovation there. There's some unique ways to buffer these, the landscaping and design and things like that. But this brings back a housing ownership option to those in making workforce wages. So those making $50,000 to $75,000 can afford this product type as an ownership option. That was, you know, as early as 5 to 6 years ago, if you made $60,000 here in the state of Arizona, you were a homeowner, and that's just not the case anymore. So this is just one option of creating an ownership option for that segment of the income brackets. The last two, seeking grant funding to support housing and supporting infrastructure, such as transportation options. And then finally, and I touched on this in the gap analysis, to support carefully targeted subsidized housing programs that are targeting workforce level wage households. So 40 to 80% of the area median income. This typically means multifamily housing. This would support your essential workers, such as police, firefighters, teachers, nurses, and other critical service providers in Oro Valley that are currently overburdened by housing costs. Again, it is often noted that there's a concern about what these are. There's a lot of really old, dilapidated public housing and affordable housing, and it looks awful. But if I could take you to any low-income housing tax product that has been built in the last 5 to 10 years, you cannot tell that it is not just a regular market rate apartment community. Most of these, because of the requirements placed on affordable housing developers, they're overbuilt. They're actually more expensive to build than a market rate housing product because of the requirements that are made. The finishes that are required are just like a market rate housing development. The only real difference you can see is usually these are smaller communities. So you might see them as small as 25 to 50 to 75 units versus a more conventional market rate housing development, which is usually 100 to 200 or more units. Those are my recommendations, and I'm happy to open up to questions, but thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Court, and that's exactly what we'll do. So I suspect that council members will have a number of questions. Like we've done in the past, I'm going to suggest that we go in alphabetical order, give each of you 5 minutes. We'll just rotate through. Everyone will have an opportunity to ask their questions, but I believe if we do it that way, council members, a question you have may be asked by another council member, and that way, even with this, there may be 30 minutes or so between the time that you have to post questions and then when it comes back around to you. So, and then we'll take a break around 8 o'clock, just as a heads up. So we'll begin with Vice Mayor Barrett, and you have your 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me lot of good weekend
nighttime reading
yeah. here. And I mean, I enjoyed a lot of the data that was presented. I think that there are some gaps in the data or place where the data needs to be updated that would be useful and helpful for us in evaluating this. And I also felt that the sort of doom and gloom that came out of some of this presentation was not justified or warranted by the data, and that there was a tremendous amount of good news for Oro Valley and for our residents and for our housing supply, and even going into the next general plan, even exactly as we are, I feel we're well positioned to meet all Arizona legal requirements. I want to start out by, can you open the presentation? The report itself, because that's where I did most of my reading. And in the summary, the Town of Oro Valley housing assessment and survey summary on page 13.
You're in the survey report?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No, this is your summary. The Town of Oro Valley housing assessment and survey summary is what it's titled. Let's see, maybe the executive summary, probably that one. Yeah. So page 13.
Good job up in the booth.
Thank you. So there we go, under housing needs. On this document, I understand that one of our needs for the general plan is to have a forecast of how much we would grow and how we're going to meet those housing needs.
Yes.
So is that where this number of units forecasted is coming in?
The housing forecast is produced by the population forecast is produced by the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity. At the writing of this report, we were using the population projections that were produced in 2019. We convert the population projection to a housing unit projection based on your average household size.
Okay, so how much is it telling us that we will need? You have here 3,100 units.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, and how much do we currently have zoned?
I believe the town planning staff may be able to answer this better, but I believe it was that you have just under 1,500 vacant lots available mm-hmm. for single-family detached housing, and then you have another inventory of attached, multifamily sites.
Right. So it says we have 3,117 residential units that can currently be built.
Yep.
So it looks like we have zoned already as many units as we're projected to build until 2040.
For future population, if they can afford those homes, the future population has it. There are enough. There's enough available land to accommodate the future population. The population projection is also a function of your available land, so it should match.
Yeah. Okay. So given our expected population, it looks like we do have enough. And then in terms of our current percentage of apartments, what is our current percentage that is going to be multifamily or is multifamily now of our housing?
Let's
see. I thought I had written it. It's on another. There was one page it said 15 something, and another page said 13 something. So somewhere in
that.
Yeah,
the only reason I'm hesitating is so multifamily has several definitions. So the U.S. Census starts to define multifamily. It could be. One unit attached is actually a condominium or townhome, but that can technically be called multifamily as well. So it just, a standard definition that you could probably be, if you look at the 5-plus unit line item, it's in our presentation. If you want to go back to that window.
So Vice Mayor, you're 5 minutes, but we'll finish this.
Let me just finish this. Okay, I'll just go ahead and finish this thought. So basically what I'm finding is that, you know, we have projected housing for the next till 2040. We have those residential units built, and of the housing that will be built, 52.8% of it is going to be multifamily already, the way it's zoned today, without zoning any additional multifamily. So already compared to the Oro Valley housing supply that exists of multifamily, we're already going to be increasing that substantially by having, you know, majority of our new housing units that come in till 2040 be multifamily. So I just wanted to point that out because I feel like we're well positioned going into the general plan to be able to show that housing diversity, to be able to show that we're meeting the needs of future and projected residents. And and to be able to meet some of those needs in our current existence. So I guess that's the end of my 5 minutes.
Okay. Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you. Could we go back to the presentation and look at the occupancy status table, please? Am I reading this correctly, that Oral Valley actually has a higher vacancy rate than Pima County, 12.1% to 10.1%?
Yes.
And could we go to the average income chart? So am I reading this correct, that when we look at average income, the average income of Oral Valley is about 50% higher than Pima County, 120 over 80?
Yes, if you're looking at average income, yes.
And I concur with what the vice mayor is saying. There's all kinds of good news in here, and it's really a shame we had to wait so long for the census. Because I'll tell you my personal experience here. When I moved here, I found a great place to live within a week. But I've heard from many people there's no place to rent. It's ridiculously expensive. And I'll just tell you, my own personal experience in my 20s was two or three professionals moved in together. They got roommates to afford a nice two-bedroom apartment or a nice three-bedroom apartment or a nice rental house. And you can do that here. I've done the math. You put a nurse and a cook together, a pharmacy technician, you know, and another, you know, a registered nurse or what have you. It's amazing to me how affordable a two-bedroom apartment is here for two professionals. Final question I'm going to have, because I know that my 5 minutes is going to run out pretty quickly. You recommend a retail gap analysis be done by the town. Can you explain why that would be a responsibility of the town or a good idea for the town to do the retail gap analysis?
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, a retail gap analysis simply looks at the dynamics of how much retail demand and supply you have. If there is what kind of vacancy you have in your existing retail establishments, and then looks at the remaining vacant land that's zoned for those purposes, and then it would compare it to your population forecast and determine if future population and how much retail they're going to demand, how much and how much may be attracted to the town. If you have an excess of vacant commercial land, that's an opportunity cost for the town that perhaps you can balance those land uses back out to if there's, say, demand for more residential product. If you allow more residential on that land, it will create more retail demand, and you're basically balancing out your remaining vacant land uses.
And I would offer another point of view. You're actually creating an imbalance with that. What we have, in my opinion, I was at a meeting here in the same room last night, full of people, 4 hours, talking about a product that you're suggesting to us to be put up against existing residential. And I would, you know, offer that there's three choices for land, and we're consistently told by staff it's two. If it doesn't work out as commercial, it's got to be residential. Sometimes it works out as open space. It really does. I think that there's a lot of land speculators in Oral Valley that invested in commercial, and they did it a long time ago, 1987, 1997. They thought a spur freeway was coming through here, or we'd grow like Marana. And they just made a mistake. And I feel like the residents I saw last night, they are being asked to have their investments suffer in their own single-family residence that they've built up equity in sometimes 20 or 30 years. And you're telling us the town needs the money from these new products. And I will tell you, having been on this council for 3 years, we run a surplus. So some of the advice that you're giving to us, I think you guys did a great job of answering the mail. I really appreciate your work. My question is, what mail were you given to answer by our staff? You know, you don't know what our apartment entitlements are. That's critical to what we're talking about here. And it's not your fault. You weren't told. But for me in Oral Valley, we're 15 miles from the 10 freeway going west. We're 15 miles going south. There aren't a lot of areas in the whole country that are as affluent as we are, but have so little road access rail access, and an airport. We need analysis, but it needs to be tailored to our geographical situation. This is great analysis, but it's off the rack. It's, your town's running out of money. You need to build more apartments. You need to increase density. I came here to get away from density. I came from a place where the revenues were way higher than in Oral Valley. I come from Torrance, California. For your quality of life, there's a lot more to it than the revenues your town collects. It's the quality of services, infrastructure, and how much you enjoy living in your house. So this was just a tremendous break for me and why I wanted to participate in town council in the first place. This is a great place. If you don't think so, go live in Torrance, California, and compare it to here. The value here that you get for your $1,500 or $2,000, in my opinion, just the opinion of one resident, it's really good. And part of our job is not just to make money for the town, but to protect the single family equity that people have built up here over decades. And I'll see the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. Councilmember Green?
Can I comment on that just real quickly? Just as a point of clarification, there is nowhere in the report that we say that the town is running out of money. There's a fiscal impact analysis of if you were to build additional residential and what kind of town revenues that brings, but there is no conclusion that the town is running out of money, nor is there a conclusion that you need to build multifamily product. It is just if you want to address the cost-burdened residents of the town. Our recommendation is to increase supply, and private market solution is multifamily.
Council
Mayor, if I could respond just real quickly.
As long as it's a 30-second response. Yeah. Council Member Jones-Ivy.
And I just want to make a comment. You offer one very viable, private market solution. There's another private market solutions that have been used for centuries. If you have a housing affordability problem, you take in a roommate. And that's what I see here that's just so incredible. We can get to affordability with so many things by just taking in one additional tenant. And that's another, in my mind, private market solution. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If we can go to page 8, the presentation, where it talks about 1 in 10 residents indicate they are at least somewhat likely to move away from Oral Valley due to housing costs, with 4% very likely are nearly certain. Why? Now, who is the most vulnerable? Please identify that group. Are you saying the residents that gave you the responses?
This is based on the responses of the residents. Okay. So those, in answering that question, residents who rent, 24% of that group said they are very or nearly certain that they will need to move away from Oro Valley because of the cost of housing.
Okay.
And if they're under age 35, 18% of them said they were very certain or nearly certain.
Okay, one of the things that I did not notice in this study is that the trend with the younger generation in terms of housing, because unlike my generation and the generation prior to me, you bought a home and that was your investment and you were there forever, raised a family in the whole nine yards. And I'm not seeing that with your millennials, your Gen Xers. They're pretty transient. They're not holding down jobs as long as our generation did, and I did not see that anywhere in your study. So I was wondering, are they a part of this so-called vulnerable group or what?
I mean, we have their age group. So you see, if they're under age 35, they would fall into that group, and they are also, that younger age group is also more likely to be renters. So there is definitely an overlap between those who are under age 35 and who rent. So just the combination of the two make them more likely to.
So was there any look at median income in these groups?
Income was another variable, but it was not. These provided more insight than looking at income.
Say that to me again and tell me what insider you're making reference to.
No, that's fine. We did evaluate or look at income as a variable, but when we look at what differentiated opinion, these items were stood out most. But I'm sure if we combined and looked at smaller groups and said, okay, what about younger people with lower incomes and built it down, it would provide differentiation. But in terms of being able to provide the most insight on the question, these were the breakdowns that were most meaningful as opposed to including an income differentiation. It's not that income doesn't play a role, it's just that these were the most striking.
Okay, because most young people that I'm running into seem to have the income, they just don't want to be tied into a single family dwelling for 20, 30, 40 years or more. As I look around, not only here but outside of the state, there are you can lease for a lifetime. And that seems to be fitting people's needs for the younger generations, and I'm not seeing that information as a part of your report at all.
We didn't ask a specific question about their preferences. We were strictly asking about affordability and what they were looking for in the town. And this particular question was just about see themselves staying in Oro Valley because of the cost of housing. That's only what this question was. But there's obviously a lot of other questions about housing preferences and permanent dwellings and that sort of thing that we didn't, just wasn't part of the study, purpose of the study.
I think that needs to be a part of the study. Let's look at the trends of our younger generation and what it is that they're looking for. Because that will greatly impact the recommendations that you have here.
I understand for future research.
I would really like to have that information, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Absolutely agree. The study is just the basis to start those conversations, so I agree. There's definitely trends that the consultants did not include in those questions and conversations. And so really the study is to start that conversation with the broader community to see what direction we wanted it to go and to see if there are other issues or gaps that the data is not showing. And that is a preference one, right, for the younger generation. So that's why we wanted to do this study now and get it out there as we start planning for the next 10 years with the general plan. To kind of, with that general plan, start honing in on those goals and policies with regards to housing to see what gaps we need in preferences and with the data as well. So agree with your comment, but I do think it's something that we'll continue to get more of those as these conversations over the next 3 years happen for the general plan.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Hi. You guys were talking about affordability, not unique to Oro Valley, and I think that's the gist of it. Like, all across the United States, interest rates went up for everyone in the United States. Housing got expensive. The Fed kept the rates too low. They're starting to raise it. COVID happened. $7 trillion, zero interest rate for 4 years. We've seen what's happened. And it's not a unique thing to Oro Valley. And, talking about housing supply, I think Melanie hit it. We have 3,114 units planned. That was from Buyer's news article that he posted a couple weeks ago in Explorer, and you just said we need 3,100, and this is by 2040, so we're there. But not only that, but like in the area, like we're not a 50 miles wide city. We're, Marana's 3 miles to the west, Tucson's actually 2 miles to the south. So, even in Marana, they have 13,000 units coming in. So I think there is supply. There's also a lot of construction. I mean, you just drive around. When those interest rates were low, people started building apartments. We just approved a giant apartment complex building at Tangerine and Oracle. So I think we have the stuff planned. We have stuff getting built. And, Oro Valley is unique in the fact that most of the residents here just don't want apartments. Like, you're just talking about the mobile home parks. Like, we have one beautiful mobile home park, but our citizens would not want to put in mobile home parks. I doubt that they'd want low-income housing. I know you said, they're 5, 10 years old. They look great. They're brand new. Yeah, they build them brand new. They have those tax incentives for 30 years, the tax abatement stuff for 30 years. But, you know, there's a period where that goes away, and they're just an investment. If you, the very first, nobody builds a crappy apartment. They build an apartment 30 years later that's got to be reinvested and fixed up. But there's a, it's an investment vehicle. It deteriorates. But some of the recommendations, I just don't feel that it fits the uniqueness of Oro Valley. We do need housing units, but it's, you know, you can commute to Oro Valley. It's 3 miles to Tucson and Marana. I drive 26 miles to where I work, and I drive back. I do that because I love in Oro Valley. I love being in Oro Valley. But let's see. Yeah, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you're talking about, you know, it's going to happen over time, just the rent. People can't afford homes. Homes prices can't keep going up 5% a year, 8% a year. They've gone up 30% over the last few years. But even the Bureau of Labor Statistics has showed the rents have been going up, you know, where I write, I did write it down, but 8%, oh, 2%, now 0.9%. And if you go to the other housing indicators, apartment list is one of the research firms, and they said that Arizona rents have actually go down 3.5% over the last 11 months. If you look at apartments.com, Zillow, you see all these rent cuts. So rents are starting to come down. House pricing, the CPI, the index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know it's delayed. They get the data, they compile it, and they report it out. But you see the trend of it going up is starting to revert. You're an economist, so you know the trend line is starting to go down. It's not actually going to show a negative until we get some reports to actually show it below. But you saw the trend growth coming back down for housing prices. And some of those things that aren't in the Bureau of Labor Statistics are, you know, the sale, it's based on the sales price of the house, but they're not counting, hey, who's paying for closing costs, who's paying for this and that, and, like, that's not included in their prices. So some of those things are in the trajectory of changing. But I do appreciate all the information you provided to us. That's my 5 minutes, I believe.
Actually, I have 2 more minutes if you...
Because I talk really fast. Well, that's all I wrote down for tonight. Now, so all right. That was my excuse.
Councilmember Solomon.
Okay, can you bring up the chart that shows housing prices versus time? The graph, yes. Okay. Housing prices is a direct function versus supply. In fact, there are other things that affect it, particularly interest rates. We have record high interest rates of recent years, yet the housing prices are steeply increasing in spite of that. This shows that supply does not keeping up with demand in Oro Valley. That's why the prices are going up. If this chart was flat, supply would be equaling demand. If this chart was going down, like we saw in 2008, it'd be the reverse. There'd be no demand, and there would be a supply. So this is the fact here. Now, project this out 18 years. We're saying we'll need 3,000 more units because there'll be 3,000 more population growth. What do you think this chart is going to do? Well, I'd be concerned if I needed a new car, and I was told there were 30 people that needed a new car, and the dealership had 30 cars available, just the exact amount of cars versus the people shopping. What kind of choice does that leave you? Effectively, zero choice. Now, the population growth is also a factor of this chart. If people can't afford to live here, even if they want to live here, they're not going to live here. And the population won't grow. And it's a lot of people will say, well, that's fine. We don't want anyone else here. What about your children? Would you like your children to be able to get a job and live here? What about your parents that are getting on in years that you think, gee, it'd be nice to move mom and dad down the street so they'd be close to us? So these are just some comments I'd like to make. First off, a comment was made that there's lots of available housing. No, there isn't. This chart proves it. Also, I happen to be a realtor. You go out shopping for a house in Oro Valley now, there's very little available. That's why this is going up. Apartments, they're at a near 100% vacancy rate when you take into account turnovers. So that's where we currently are. And if the town wants to keep it that way,
That's up to the town. You know, whether it's good or bad is subjective, but just keep in mind the reality of the situation that to say, oh, in 18 years we need 3,000 units and we've actually got 3,000 lots that are zoned for it, so don't worry about it. Well, you're not even sure whether they're suitable to building or not and what type of housing they would be. So I think it was, you know, a very informative study. And I think one thing that is obviously definite, and we've had studies before, is government can affect supply and demand in housing several ways. I'm actually opposed to government interfering with the free market. But in Oro Valley, we do have the situation where Oro Valley was originally planned out at a much higher residential density than occurred. Rancho Vistosa is a great example. So there's a lot of excess commercial property because the original commercial zoning was based on a much larger, higher density of residential units. People didn't make a mistake investing in commercial property because they were stupid. It's because residential property development of high density didn't occur. The market was for more medium density development. So we have indeed an excess of commercial property that at the current population and density will simply not be utilized. And we have a shortage of residential property, as noted by the 3,000 units over 18 years. So that is one point that the local government or this council or future councils could look at, is saying, do we want to increase the potential supply for housing by allowing rezoning of commercial property that is not needed into residential property, which has the additional benefit of helping the current commercial businesses that are struggling because they don't have the number of rooftops. I'd like to, as I said, thank you for it. That's my takeaway from the study, and certainly appreciate the input and your response to the questions. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. Danny, what was the reason that you did not use actual compensation numbers for the Town of Oro Valley Police or Golden Ranch Fire Department?
Those were just, again, publicly available data, which we typically use the BLS for that. So we can supplement that. You know, if the town obviously has those salary information, we can supplement that.
We definitely have the salary access information.
Yeah.
Not for Golden Ranch Fire Department, but it's certainly available. But I think I can't speak to the other professions that you listed there, but those in particular jumped out at to me because I believe they're much lower than what the Golden Ranch Fire Department or the Town of Oro Valley Police. So I think that's something that does need to be corrected.
Sure.
And the other with the Golden Ranch Fire Department, you know, their taxing district, of course, is much larger than the Town of Oro Valley. I believe we have three stations, Golden Ranch Fire District stations in Oro Valley, and now we have their main headquarters in Oro Valley. But Oro Valley only represents about 15% of the land area that Golden Ranch Fire Department services. So yeah, just for your information. And then what it talks in the report about, there's references to commuting, and this may be a subjective question, but what do you consider a long commute?
What do I personally consider a long commute?
Or? Well, I mean, it was mentioned in the report about, you know, a long commute. So what is a long commute in your...
I'll refer back to, there are bracketed distances that the U.S. Census uses. There's one range of 25 to 50, and then the final range is 50 miles or more. So I guess you could say that would be...
50 miles or more is a long commute?
Yes.
Yeah, because I've lived in Oro Valley for almost 27 years. I worked downtown Tucson. I think from my garage to where I parked was about 15 miles. 15 miles. For a number of years, I bused and biked, and now there's actually a multi-use path that would have taken me almost direct, you know, without having to cross any traffic. I'd probably be biking these days if I continued to work downtown. But anyway, so I think to Councilmember Bowen's point that, you know, you can reach I-10. I think it's about 10 miles. Downtown Tucson is 15. You know, we have our neighbors, Marana, and so on and so forth, that have a significant housing stock. The presentation, similar presentation that you made tonight at the Planning and Zoning Commission that I listened to, there was the discussion about the decline in Oro Valley affordability. I mean, that's really universal. That's not unique to Oro Valley. I read recently where affordability in Phoenix went from 85% to maybe 22%, you know, of the population. And so, is there some reason that there wasn't a comparison with some of our adjoining municipalities in terms of affordability?
Yeah, it's just for the simple reason that the scope is not to discuss the competitiveness of the town, but just to look at the town in terms of its affordability to its especially for its existing residents.
But I think it would be helpful. So it sounds like that wasn't part of the scope, but to put some of that in context, because this isn't just an Oro Valley issue. This is a regional, certainly, issue. Thank you, Councilmember Green. Okay, I think at this point, maybe we'll take a break and then we'll come back, Danny. So we'll take about a 10-minute break and come back. So there's restrooms outside as you exit. Okay, we'd like to resume our study session. If folks could wrap up their discussions, take their seats, or take their commute home. Vice Mayor Barrett, Danny, you're back in the spotlight here.
Assuming there's any questions from the council. Sorry, I was kind of teasing us. So I'll try and be quick because I have a lot. But I just think we need some things updated. And, like, we need our actual salaries of our Oro Valley police, who are the highest paid police in southern Arizona and have short. We shortened their steps and things. And so, plus with overtime, I think their average should be significantly higher than what's posted. And similar with Goldar Ranch Fire. I'll never be one who says teachers are paid enough. Teachers definitely need to be paid more. But we have, of the Oro Valley schools that we have, I mean, Oro Valley is only 35 square miles, so it's very small. And of the Oro Valley schools, both of our high schools are on the very edge of Oro Valley location-wise, along with some of our middle schools. And a number of Oro Valley kids don't even attend school in Oro Valley. My kids are zoned to go to school in Catalina. And about 40% of our Oro Valley kids go to school in Catalina. So, I mean, clearly, in terms of schools and stuff, there is quite a bit of affordable housing within the range around our schools. And also, we're not expecting to see growth in that category. At least that's what we're being told. We have an area zoned for a school. And we just had an application to have it zoned into houses because they said we can't build a school. So whether there's going to be a lot of additional demand from schools and teachers and stuff like that, I think is a little bit of a challenge. I'd like to see more context given. So I think it's like, for example, that this one, what is it? Housing Opportunity Index. I'd like to see Oro Valley's actual number on that Housing Opportunity Index, and I'd like to see that compared to Marana, compared to Sarita, compared to Tucson, Pima County, etc., so we can get some context. And then that issue of the increase in houses of the chart that Councilmember Solomon had pulled up, I'd like to see that compared to state and national trends so we can really gauge, you know, whether this is a particular issue for us or whether this is just a general issue. Statistically speaking, I think there are some things that we need to get kind of straight. Like, for one thing, we're using median salaries and then average home prices. So I think we need to do that consistently. Median home prices, median salaries, or average home prices, average salaries. But we need to keep those consistent with each other. And then similarly, when we are comparing apartments and single family, et cetera, I see a lot of comparisons that kind of pick per acre or per unit. And so I'd like to see, honestly, I'd like to see both per acre and per unit, because I think that that helps us to have a little bit more context in different categories. But, you know, prior to this, we had another housing study done, and it said, you talked about, like, crime per unit or water per unit. And now we're talking about how much money could it bring in per acre, right? So it's like, if we're going to compare per unit or per acre, we have to compare consistently across those categories. Otherwise, we're just kind of choosing which one fits in that moment. So those are some things that I'd like to see changed and updated. Am I done?
2 minutes.
Oh, okay. And then I want to talk a little bit about the commuting. So the numbers that I saw on, which are in your report on page III of the Town of Oro Valley Housing Assessment, it talks about commuting, and it says there are 12,831 workers who leave the community each day and 8,474 workers who commute into the community each day. So if part of the concern is commuting and the busyness on our roads, which is what it says here, high number of commuters increases traffic on roadways, especially north-south routes in Oro Valley. Of all of our commuters, there's 12,305 commuters. 4,000 more commute out than in. And everyone in Oro Valley can tell you that rush hour goes out and then in. And 60% of all commuting is out of Oro Valley, not into Oro Valley. So if we build more housing, it's very likely we're going to increase that problem. Because if the ratio or proportion of that housing stays roughly the same, the people who move into it are, if 60% of them commute out and 40% of them commute in, it's actually going to increase any kind of rush hour commuting traffic problems. So in terms of solving the commute problem, if there is a commute problem, I'm just not sure that building more housing does that or creates an unreasonably long commute. So let's see. I'll stop at that point.
Okay. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. And I think it's a privilege to have the expertise that you guys provide to us, but my questions are going to kind of be along the lines of, what kind of inputs did you get to do your work? For example, were you given access to the 2020 apartment study before you did your analysis?
We did not utilize the 2020 apartment study. We used just updated statistics. Most of them are from a apartment research vendor named Real Data Inc., which provides quarterly statistics in the region.
And that might have helped you avoid some tough questions, because in there, that's how I know. I don't think there's a lot of people in this town that know that really how many entitlements we have out there. There's not a sign on a property that says you can build apartments there. You know, we just added 532. There's a lot of entitled apartments, and I just would like to speak. There's a real limitation to what council can do about housing. We grant entitlements, done, and then we're out of the picture. It's up to the people, in my mind, who build the apartments at that point. And where we really need to get involved and get very, very focused is like last night. When the entitlements change, that's the point of no return. And I wish you had the opportunity to realize that. I don't think the people last night were being selfish at all. They had moved, they had invested, and they were literally watching their equity be threatened so we could preserve the equity of a commercial landowner who was never going to put commercial on their land, but rather they needed to go to residential. Were you given access to the fact that we paid off our PSPRS pension a couple of years ago?
No, we did not receive that information.
And then once again, my initial comments, they're not phony, they're not flattery. You can't do the best work unless you have the best information. And one of the reasons why I thought that was such a good idea, one of the things that's most alarming in here is you've created a city where the police officers, who are one of your most valued assets, can't afford to live there. So what is we as a council, what can we do? Well, one of the things, we can give them pay raises to make them amongst the highest paid officers in Southern Arizona. That's a short-term belief in the police. But just as important is a long-term belief in the police. What would you feel is if you were one of the best police departments in the city or in the state and your town wouldn't fund your pension? And what did we didn't pull a miracle. We just took money out of reserves that we were holding on to, and we applied it to the pension. Basically, to me, it's like paying down a credit card debt with money that's just sitting in your savings. That's to me, that's a good move every time. So you weren't aware of our unique police situation when you're making
recommendations. To the extent that it would apply to the housing conditions and gap assessment, we certainly can take their current salaries to compare it to what's affordable in the town. I don't know the relevance of the pension system and their current finances as it relates to this scope.
Well, I'll offer up this. A benefit of a fully funded pension makes you much confident in working for your salary right now, because you know not only are you getting your current salary, but your employer believes in your long-term financial well-being. And I think that says the town walks the talk when they say they think the police are excellent. And it just tells them that, hey, finish out your service and you'll be rewarded in the way that you've expected probably since day one. And then regarding, you know, you mentioned incremental revenues from new residents, consumption, shopping, retail, you know, state share revenues. Did you get any information from the staff on incremental costs of a new resident? Because we require services. We beat up the road, we drink water, the police, everything. It's not free that you get new residents. So do you have any idea what the costs per resident are?
The scope did not include a cost-benefit analysis. It was a fiscal impact analysis.
So benefits without costs.
In terms of what the scope required, yes, it was to look at the benefits but not the cost.
Okay, so I'd like to make the comment. That's not valuable. The benefits, there's always benefits. I could be out driving an Uber right now. All I needed was more money all the time, or I could go get a job at Walmart watching people walk in and out. There's more to life than just maximizing your revenue. It's also quality of life. And if we're not asking people, you know, how much it costs for a resident, we're only talking about how much a resident brings in, then we're not telling a very complete or, to me, a very valuable story. Somebody came in to interview for our town manager's job, and he said something. He used a two-word phrase. I don't know if anyone else picked up on it, but I think it's absolutely critical for Oral Valley, and it's called financial gardening. And what's gardening? I'll tell you what it's not. It's not industrial farming. It's not seeking to grow more and to grow more, create more revenue so I have a little bit extra revenue over my costs. Gardening is intense effort in a limited area, right? You're trying to produce something that's beautiful, and you substitute your effort for the resources that you don't have a chance to obtain. Marana is much different from us. You go over and look at Marana. Marana is taking a bunch of farmland, and they're bragging. They're bragging about building, you know, industrial buildings that don't even have a tenant.
Your time has elapsed, so if you could wrap up your thought.
And I was just saying, analysis for Oral Valley has to take Oral Valley's geography into account, or it's not much use to us. Thank you.
Councilmember Green. Okay. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Mayor Winfield, if I could interject something really quickly. Sure. I wanted to give a little bit more perspective on
the scope of the housing study versus the scope of other studies that we have upcoming. One of the things that is in the strategic plan, of course, was the housing study. Once the housing study was completed, it was anticipated that we would conduct the retail gap analysis that follows. We also have another study going on that we always provide to the town council each year, and that's the build-out analysis, which would do just as you're talking about, looking at development from a geographical impact and conducting that analysis. The other thing that we have is that would talk about your cost-benefit analysis and those future revenue projections is the study that Dave Gebhardt is conducting regarding all of this. So you have a cumulative base of knowledge that's coming forward to be part of that general plan discussion. Yes, it's coming in pieces because you look at one aspect of it. Again, we were waiting for the results of the housing study then to be able to conduct the retail gap analysis so that we weren't duplicating parts of the scope. So you'll get a comprehensive analysis and view of that. In short, I'd have to ask the town manager and Dave again when we'd anticipate that financial analysis that runs parallel with the build-out analysis, but you will get all that information as part of this discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Meltzer.
Thank you.
Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do have one question. It's on page 21 under your Town of Oral Valley Housing Assessment and Survey Summary. Down at the end of page 21, third bullet point, allow secondary dwelling units on existing lots. Please help me understand what that means.
That would, Mayor and Councilmember Jones Ivey, that would be something like the accessory dwelling unit is one term, but it would be like a guest house or a casita on an existing single family detached lot. So if you had a large lot with available space on your side or backyard, there's many municipalities that are enacting ordinances to allow an additional residential unit to be built on an existing lot.
For that rental?
It could be for rental. Again, back to there was some discussion on regulation of Airbnb. Sedona was one municipality that allowed accessory dwelling units, but mm-hmm. without the regulation to what they wanted was to increase the supply of long-term rentals. And what happened was a lot of those converted to short-term rental because of just the finances of you know having that as a business. So yes, it could be a rental. It could be a just a unit for a family member or aging or a younger family member. It's really up to the homeowner what they want to do with that property. But it's the intent is to increase housing supply.
Okay, thank you.
Is that it, Councilmember Jones Ivey? Okay. Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to mention from what Melanie said that I have the unique ability to see the traffic flow both ways. They do shift work, so I drive down to the airport's 26.2 miles door to door. Going to work, it can be a pain, can take quite a while, but when I drive back, sometimes 8 o'clock in the morning, it's almost nothing. So, I mean, I do think that most of the flow is outbound. Steve, I want to mention the housing. I do agree that it is very low inventory, but it is the trajectory is changing. So the Southern Arizona MLS, the data I got from there from October 22 to November 2023, it has increased by 54.2% of the housing units available. And then you know, I want to mention, too, like what Tim said was, you know, there is a cost to bringing in people. We always talk about shared revenue, the benefits, the retail revenue from sales tax revenue. But, you know, we're not Apple Incorporated. We don't make a profit as a town. So every time we get a resident, there is a cost. We got to do roads. We got to do plumbing. Yes, there's an impact fee when we build apartment units. That's great. But that's a one-time fee, and then we have to have maintenance of it. So, you know, building more units, you know, you get more retail, you have one pizza shop, now you have two pizza shops. You know, the big driving factors of an economy of any city or town, you'll know this, is, you know, your university, your education, your supply of workers, and also, too, like companies that export stuff, whether it's your Yuma and you export lettuce, or your Tucson and you export Raytheon and, you know, our military out from Davis-Monthan. So, that's it.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. Some general comments. You know, I think one of the public's pet peeves
is when you look at the amount the taxpayer money spent on a lot of studies that a lot of times they think are somewhat irrelevant, or that they're spending a lot of money overstudying something. I'm really concerned about expanding the scope of this. It's been suggested in wanting updated details for the exact salaries or rents and so forth, because my question is, what's our objective? What are we going to use this study for? Is the study in its current form adequate enough for council's objective? What decisions does council want to make? What are we planning on doing with this study, and what can we do with this study? So I'm concerned about spending additional money for updating details. I'm just getting at is, as we said, there's very limited amounts that this council can do relative to the housing supply other than rezoning and reducing regulations to make the process less expensive so the final home that is built can be sold at a less expensive, a lower, quote, price point. So I just, I don't want just automatically change this, add this, do that, do this, and get an invoice for spending more taxpayers' money unless there is a definitive reason why we need it, and that it's going to be something that is going to enable the council to take a specific action which we couldn't otherwise take with the information that we currently have. That's my comments on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Danny, in the report, talks about tax benefit, and it says that it speaks to revenue from rental tax, and Town of Oro Valley doesn't have a rental tax. Are you proposing that we enact a rental tax? Or?
No. If there is no rental tax, then that should be omitted from the analysis.
All right, thanks. And then also there's a recommendation proposing subsidized housing. Can you speak or comment on the cost of that and who pays for subsidized housing?
That can be up to every community. Like I mentioned before, there can be no cost to the town. There are low-income housing tax credit developers. There are developers that use the 4% bonds that come in. They can simply come find a suitable piece of property, and if approved, and if they get their tax credit financing, they can build that product. There are opportunities like we mentioned, City of Sedona. They incentivized a developer to come in to build a apartment product that would be affordable to those making 100% of the area median income. So that's a housing product that does not qualify for some of the government subsidies, but would still be being offered at a subsidized rate. And so City of Sedona just basically contributed $4 million to the construction of that project. So the range is anywhere from zero to as much money as you want to invest in if you wanted to.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Melcher, I think this question is probably for you. How many businesses in Oro Valley, or how many business licenses have we issued?
Mayor Winfield, are you good with a guess, since I don't have my computer in front of me?
Yeah, I'm sure you have better guess than I do.
It would be, I'm going to say, between 700 and 750.
I think that's low.
But that might be businesses versus licenses, or I seem to recall that's listed on the Navigator.
Okay.
Is 700 and some.
Hmm. Yeah, I do think that's low. And we have folks coming in to Oro Valley that presumably are employees, we're saying 8,000. I've rounded up.
I think that's the difference between businesses and employees.
Well, yes. Right. So this is employees.
Right.
We have 8,000 folks that are coming in to work in Oro Valley. So presumably there's those 8,000 employees, then the number of folks that aren't commuting. I mean, they live in Oro Valley and they go to work in Oro Valley. Any idea of the number of employees?
The census reports 10,300 employees.
10,300, thanks. So our breakdown in terms of the online survey is 51 employers and 85 employees, but we show in the report, I mean, it's almost as if it's comparable to the statistically valid survey. And if we've got 10,300 employees and 85 responded, it almost seems statistically invalid. And so I think it's a little...
Yeah, I mean, we stated at the beginning that this was supplemental and it was an opt-in, and so it was just simply presented as information. The town felt that the department felt that it was valuable to at least ask the questions. But yes, it was not a concerted, meant to be a statistically reliable, defensible study. It was meant to provide additional information to the town.
Mayor Winfield, and I would add to that, one of the things that the planning manager and I have been discussing is with the lack of specific participation after our outreach efforts, it might be a necessity to conduct a more specific business survey, looking at the results.
Yeah, I think that there's certainly a good rationale for that. Again, I think what's represented here is it's just not credible. And I don't think it adds a lot of value personally.
At this point, I would agree, and I think that's why during our one-on-one business visits or visits with our primary employers, we've heard that anecdotal response to about housing, but it's not quantifiable yet. And I think that's a good follow-up to this study could be, how do we make those results from those primary employers or businesses more quantifiable?
Thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind, while I ask my first question, pulling up in the 2023 Town of Oro Valley Housing Survey Report, page 20. But I first want to ask about the survey, how it was conducted in terms of the zip codes. Did you have any way to determine if people actually lived in Oro Valley? Just curious. Because the zip codes, like 85742, covers all of Dove Mountain from Tangerine to Cortero and east of I-10. And 85704 goes all the way down the River Road. And obviously 85739 is mostly Catalina, but I'm less concerned about that because only 3% of the responses came from that.
Yeah. The opening question is, do you live in the town of Oro Valley?
Oh, okay.
The people said that they did.
Okay.
And then when we said, okay, and what is your zip code?
Okay.
So we didn't start with the zip code.
I see. Okay. Okay, yeah. Good. That's helpful, I think. And I appreciate that. I just wasn't sure. I think people would self-report correctly on that. Okay. And then one of the concerns that I have regarding the report, and especially regarding using it for the general plan, is, you know, the general plan is supposed to be, as we would say, like, by the people, of the people, for the people, and they vote on it, and it's the people's plan. And we're trying to get their voices heard. And I just feel that the recommendations in the report kind of went the exact opposite of the suggestions from the residents. And it kind of felt like, when I was reading the summary, almost half or nearly half was the first phrase. Like, even most of the statistics that were quoted didn't even cross the 50% threshold in terms of agreement with that. And so that's why I wanted to open on page 20 of that housing survey report. Let's see. So the second one, yeah, attachment to, there it is, thank you. I mean, this is kind of the response from our residents, right? And it almost goes exactly opposite of the recommendations in the report. And so I just kind of want to point that out and say, you know, to me, it's really important what our residents feel like. And how did you factor this in terms of your goals of your recommendations?
Okay. Yeah. There might be some nested questions in there about how residents responded and reaching that 50% threshold that you might be able to speak to, but we do have to undertake as housing economists, we are taking resident preferences into consideration, but the stated objective is to address housing gaps. And so, yes, if the residents, for example, prefer single family detached homes as the greatest need in the town of Oro Valley, but that preference cannot address the housing gaps. So there are going to be conflicts in the recommendations versus resident preferences. So again, it's, you know, you can choose how as a community you want to go forward, but the task addressed to us was how to address the unaffordability issue and the housing gaps in the community. The market provides several options, and those are the ones listed in the recommendations. You do not have to adopt them.
Okay, so I mean, is that what was asked of you? Is how to address housing affordability gaps?
It's a housing conditions and gap assessment. Yeah, that's the scope of our engagement.
Okay. That scope never, you know, came before us for discussion. We just understood there was going to be a housing study. So in terms of, you know, what we wanted to address, I don't know. Maybe it's just not on the same page, because I find it really relevant what my citizens and the citizens of Oro Valley are looking for. But I just do I have not? Oh, do you want to?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. So we brought the housing study scope, the preliminary housing study scope, in, I want to say, September of 2022, a study session. And it was part of, for the general plan, was doing the inventory and looking at the conditions and gaps. For Oro Valley, I think what the findings show is affordability is the main gap we have. And I also want to clarify that we are, as a staff, and what we were asking for them was to give recommendations, but we're not asking for any action on those. We definitely still want to go out to the community and get more of that feedback and conversations going to see what the community wants to address, if they want to address anything, and what the community, how they want to act on anything. And it may be some of the recommendations provided by the consultants. It may not be, but that will be all tied into the next general plan. So we're not asking to act on those recommendations.
Thanks. I mean, I'm not sure it's clear there is a housing affordability gap compared to the other locations in Tucson, Arizona, Phoenix, Oro Valley, Marana. I'm not sure that's clear. So in terms of saying that's the gap, I'm not sure that that's true, other than just that housing affordability generally in the western part of the nation has become difficult due to the actions of the government. So anyway, do I have one more minute, or am I done? Okay.
Yeah,
I will be done. Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, I'd like to explain why I'm in favor of updating the report. There's some really valuable things in this report I'll never get anywhere else, and that is having a couple of experts break down the 2020 U.S. Census and give us information about Oro Valley that all 50,000 people here would give a different answer to. Average rents, you know, vacancy rates. And the best arbiter I can think possibly would be the U.S. Census. There'll be people that don't believe the U.S. Census. I can't, in my own mind, think of something, a source of truth that we could use that's better than that. So I appreciate that. So say, I will use this report for the rest of the time I'm serving as a council member, because there's going to be census data I'm going to be referring back to, and it won't get updated again for 10 years. So this is the best data we're going to have for a long time. What I'm curious about, you know, in your analysis, one of the limiting factors that I think that we have in the town is simply roads. And I talked a lot, and I'll repeat myself, about how hard it is to get here. But getting around this town is difficult. And we're starting to have a lot of traffic safety issues. And I just think it's just a matter of having more cars on the road, more people, and just more opportunities for things to go wrong. I'm just curious, in terms of your recommendations, did you have any chance to factor in
There is no traffic impact analysis. There's no traffic impact analysis in this scope of work.
I don't think you allowed me to actually ask my question. Our amount of residents per amount of roadway, because I think that's something. This is a rural area. We have what you call rural. I mean, we have mile between, you know, major connectors. And that's certainly, you know, not going to support like a Mesa or an Orange County type of growth. Not only are we not close to a freeway, it's just hard to get from, you know, point A to point B in the town. And I think a lot of our traffic problems. So you're telling me that wasn't something that you factored into your recommendations?
The traffic impact is not part of the scope of the housing study.
Okay. Water, availability of water, impact of, you know, what water, increased water prices would do about affordability of us versus other nearby municipalities?
No, water availability and affordability is not part of the scope of work. It was not included in the scope of work.
Okay, and if I understand correctly before, a review of our town's financial performance over the last few years wasn't part of
what... No, that is not part of the housing conditions analysis.
Okay, so my thinking, I'm a better late than never, you know, is if you're still updating it, I think... This is a source of information, and what we gain from this is the learning, in my mind, of people that listen to it. So the more that we update, the more we pay attention to it, the more that we question it, the smarter we become as a community about what our real census environment is around us. So I support the vice mayor's recommendations to update this. I actually am so disappointed because... It's not the cost of it. I just think a massive opportunity was lost. You're very smart people. And to have some of the inputs that you're getting tonight a year ago could have provided some information. And something you need to know about this town, maybe there's not a lot of people here in the room, but we have a lot of smart people that pay attention. And we, council members, I can only speak for, I learn a lot from the residents. Not just because they've lived here longer than me, but they've had different work experience. They've run different types of businesses. And, you know, and they tell me, and I watch their comments on social media, and I was like, okay, maybe I got to think about that. And I just have to reiterate, it's just, this is not for this time, but it's for the future. When we ask for analysis, whether it's parks and rec or housing or anything, we got to tailor it to our own situation. Otherwise, we're paying for information that doesn't really help us that much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Green.
Probably not part of the study or of your work, but I'm interested in what happens for housing for the vet school students. Do we have any handle on that? Or maybe Paul might even know.
Councilmember Green, could you rephrase your question for me, please, so I make
sure. The question is, where are the vet school students? Their enrollment is enlarging, and a few years ago when I looked at this, a lot of them were driving up here from Tucson. So I'd just be interested in if we have a handle on where they're coming from and where they're living.
Councilmember Green. Recently, the town
manager... I'm not sure your mic is working, Mr. Melcher.
Maybe I'm just too tall for it. Yeah. Councilmember Green, recently the town manager and I met with the vet school administrator, Julie Funk. She had given some anecdotal evidence about the housing, but I don't know that it was specific enough to give you that... An assessment with a level of accuracy that I trust. I know that there was some considerations that, based on the number, that there is a number of non-traditional students who would be still commuting back and forth, but I think that would be a specific census question to them to ask for those students who attend each one of the cohorts of the classes, where do they reside, what are their travel, all of those good things. So it might vary depending on which cohort, cohort by cohort of all the classes that are offered.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Jones Ivy.
I have no other questions. I thank you both for all of the
Councilmember Nicholson
that you put into this report.
I apologize. Councilmember Nicholson.
Hey, when you did these studies, how many did you get via email, or did you talk to them, or how was the, or are you getting the reports?
You're talking about the surveys.
Yeah, the surveys.
There was a telephone portion, which were outbound telephone calls. So that's where we purchase sample of Oro Valley residents and then randomly call the households. Then the town then posted on various pages throughout the town, social media, as well as accounts and such, inviting people to go online and complete the survey that way. So that's why we reported on the telephone portion, which is what West Group conducted, and then the online portion, which was an opt-in. I don't know if any emails were actually sent. I think it was just links were made available to people to click on.
Okay, and you never like sat at like a Safeway, just talk to people, finding them that way, or sitting outside the library or anything like that?
That, you know, it was not an intercept survey. Okay. No,
you didn't go knock around on doors because
that's not.
You're talking about getting more feedback from the people, but there's certain people up here that did, and I feel like we are the feedback as council. So I just want to say that.
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Nicholson, for the online survey, it was just posted, and we did also offer a paper survey option because not everybody wants to do something online. We didn't receive any, but we did receive. They all went online, and I will say we are definitely in front of the libraries and Safeways and Fry's for the general plan, where we are having those conversations with folks. Because agreed, not everybody's going to see the announcements, and not everybody is going to participate online. And if I may just quickly, as you guys are all bringing up, and I appreciate it, is how tied together everything is, which in terms of housing and water and roadways. And so part of the general plan rollout is every month we are publishing reports on each of those aspects. And in fact, next week we'll be publishing a roadways and circulation one, as well as public safety. And so in efforts to keep our consultants focused on housing, that's where that scope was, but absolutely can tie in when we, you know, publish the water report, how much water supply we have versus the build out. That will be part of that. And so in efforts to not have this grow into a even larger, probably 3-week midnight reading, we kept them focused on housing, on just housing, but agreed with all the comments that it all ties together, and we need to see that comprehensive background information, which we are going to be rolling out and getting out to the public to tie it all together.
Melanie, I thought you were going to say go to OV Path Forward and sign up. Okay, Councilmember Nicholson, are you?
Just say good job. It's Oro Valley. We're in a unique, we're a little different, but you as economists, I think you did a good job. Bureau of Labor Statistics, Arizona Research, and stuff like that.
Councilmember Solomon.
None at this time, thank you.
All right, I'm done as well. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thanks. I just kind of wanted to share a couple of good news. Well, I kind of made a list of like great news things that I found in the kind of buried in the details of the survey. And so it's this. So our community is a lot of homeowners whose property values have increased in their investments and track with regional and national standards. Many people own and can't afford to own their own homes in Oro Valley, although homeownership has declined and rentals have increased, which could also be good. 62% of residents in Oro Valley under 35 own their own home, which I Googled was compared to 39% in the nation. So a lot more younger people here do own their own home. We have enough housing currently zoned for our projected population growth, and a lot of that is in high-density residential. The condition of homes are high, and citizens are satisfied with them, which sets us up well for the state requirements going into our general plan regarding conditions and meeting the needs of persons with disabilities. We're very near many other areas that also have projected population growth. Oro Valley's relatively affordable compared to Phoenix, the state, and the area around it. If you look at that household income compared to housing costs, 88% of our citizens would not contemplate leaving Oro Valley. I mean, I think that speaks really highly to the quality of life that we have here. We're on a pace to meet all of our housing-related legal requirements in our general plan. Oro Valley household income is outpacing the state, helping us to remain relatively affordable. Our stabilized vacancy rate in apartments is reported to be around 7%, above what would be considered a shortage, which the study says would be 5%. So we don't have a shortage at this time. Overcrowding is not an issue in our houses. Our labor force has grown, and our renters are less cost-burdened than state and national averages compared to other places. So there's really a lot of good news for Oro Valley that is kind of in the details of the report. And that's where I was a little bit concerned with some of, the bad news. And I feel like that there's a lot of good news and a lot of good things going on in Oro Valley to emphasize. Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, I want to reiterate my gratitude for the work that was done. But I'm also proud that we were tough on you because we're the localest of local officials. We're not, Apple CEO. We're not talking about a company that's billions of dollars. But rather, we need to know our facts, what's going on at the park next door, what's going on at the community center, our roads, accidents, and things like that. And I just want to say, nothing was personal. We just want to get the best information for the town because information to guide our decisions. If we don't have good information, as far as I'm concerned, we're not decision makers. We're guessing. And it's the work that you guys do. And I just want to reiterate, thank you so much for that census data. I mean, it's been under the Christmas tree for 3 years, right? It's a 2020 census. But this first time that anybody unlocked it for us, right, and showed us what's inside of it. And I just would once again reiterate the vice mayor, having lived here and having heard everything anecdotally, I thought it was going to be a lot worse. And I'm not saying it's not tough on a minimum wage income or you don't have a college education, but what was taken, it takes to put together a viable housing situation in Oro Valley is no worse than what I experienced in South Bay, Los Angeles 35 years ago. I mean, that's just fact. Before you get married, got to put together some unique household situations, let's just say that, until you get your family going and you build some equity in your residence. And I just thought the numbers were going to say it was much worse than that, that the number of people that were challenged by the 30% ratio was going to be a lot higher than it is. I knew there had to be there, but the percentages to me were not as alarming as I was expecting to hear. A little bit of relief, and once again, it's the census. So it's not perfect, but I think it's the best guidepost that we have in terms of talking about this data. So thank you guys for what you did.
Danny and Kathy, Malini and Paul, thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation and having this dialogue with us this evening. Before we close our study session, I want to wish, on behalf of the council, everybody the happiest of holidays and New Year. Be safe. Enjoy your families and friends, and we'll see you on January 10th. Study session adjourned.